Oh, it hasn't started yet.
Thank you. Oh, don't talk is what you're telling me. wait, Tone says it's thing. Today, so really quickly, that today we have Manu talking about True Age, which is, I think, a really exciting use case and a demonstration of the kind of power and adoption that we are, you know, I just keep telling folks, I feel like the flywheel is really starting to turn, and I'm just worried about getting my sleeve caught. sorry. And if you are on the CCG list, Manu already posted the slides he's going to be going through today, so you can have those and follow along. Just to go through our housekeeping items, we follow a code of ethics and professional conduct. The link to that can be found in our agenda. But I think the basic premise is that we are all driving towards the same goals, and we want to foster a community of listening and respect and participation from everyone in the community. And I think that is one of the things I really enjoy about being a part of this community. We welcome everyone to attend and be a part of this community group. In fact, that is the purpose of a community group, is to have as many different varied voices as possible to provide feedback and ideas and iterate to the larger, from the larger community to the working groups at W3C. So anyone is welcome to participate. However, if you want to get deeper into the work and really provide any kind of substantive contributions, then I would invite you to please sign the full IPR agreement and join W3C, both of which do not cost. And you can do that by following the links also in the agenda. We do keep minutes and an audio recording of this call, which you just audio and video recording, which you just saw start. And that is important for us to keep a record of what's being said, both for, you know, historical preservation and organizational history, but also to just make sure that we are open and transparent about the things that are being discussed in this community. And we do keep track of in the queue. We use that to keep track of speakers, and that is what Harrison and I will be managing. I invite everyone who has a question or a comment on what we're about to hear today to participate in the queue, and you do that by putting Q+ in the queue. And if you want to remove yourself from the queue, you can put Q-. And now we are to the time of day that I always look forward to, which is introductions and reintroductions. For those of you that weren't on the call last week, we actually used the time last week to do an all-community introduction, which was great. So I really do invite you, if you were not here last week and want to reintroduce yourself, if you haven't been here for a while and want to introduce yourself, or if you are brand new, to please put yourself on the queue and let us know that you're here. All right. I will take that as a sign that everyone feels like they are well-versed in this community, and move on to announcements and reminders. Does anyone want to put themselves on the queue with an announcement or reminder? Manu, go ahead.
I can do one real quick. The RDF dataset canonicalization specification, which is one of those boring pieces of plumbing that kind of powers some of the verifiable credentials work, was successfully published on Halloween, of all days, as a candidate recommendation. So that basically means that we are feature complete. We are looking for implementers for that specification. The good news is we already have quite a few implementers for the specification. It did not change that drastically since 2015 or so. So that specification's out there right now. We'll be kind of collecting implementations through the end of Q1 of next year. And then, we'll be proceeding that specification to kind of a global standard at that point. So, you know, it's been in the making for 8 years now, I guess, ish. Really probably closer to 11 years is when the work started. Nearing the end, which is great to see. The other heads up is that we were scheduled to do the candidate recommendations for the verifiable credential data integrity specifications today, but due to workload issues at W3C that didn't happen, there is a we're planning on publication of those into candidate recommendation next week at some point. That's it.
Great. Do you have the link handy to those too to put in the chat, please?
Yeah, let me try and find them.
Thank you. Harrison.
Yeah, Manu, just curious, can you give us a little overview of the RDF canonicalization? Like, how's that different from like linked data? You know, yeah, it's like, what are the relationship between the two? Yeah. If there's any.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I'm trying to get these links in here. Here are the other links, to ECDSA and EDDSA. The relationship, basically when you need to digitally sign something like a verifiable credential, there, are various different ways that you can digitally sign it. One of them is you can just take the verifiable credential and kind of shove it into an envelope as it stands and then digitally sign that. One of the issues with doing that is that sometimes depending on the type of envelope you stuff the verifiable credential into, all of a sudden you can't see any of the data, you can't work with it, put it in a database and all that kind of stuff. So, canonicalization is basically used to take a verifiable credential as you see it and then transform it into something that, you can digitally sign in a way that is, in a way that kind of, signs the meaning of the credential instead of just signing what the credential looks like. So there's a difference between signing the bytes, which obscures what the credential, it obscures the credential. You can't see it anymore. Versus signing the information, associated with the verifiable credential. I'm trying to stay high level. Unfortunately, this stuff is like super low level cryptography stuff. But fundamentally, RDF dataset canonicalization is an attempt to sign the information that goes along with the verifiable credential, so that you can put that verifiable credential in a lot of different places, without there being issues with it. Like for example, if you just sign the bytes, adding a space, like a single white space into the verifiable credential will destroy the signature. And that's a problem when people go and they copy and paste this stuff and put it in web pages, like they do for like schema.org and SEO optimization and, you know, doing things like listing store hours and products and stuff like that. So RDF dataset canonicalization allows you to, basically make the data in the verifiable credential more resilient and digitally sign it at the same time. Hopefully that was helpful. It's hard to explain, you know, what it is at depth.
Oh, yep. I recall you mentioned about this as part of the data integrity proof presentation. So thank you. Uh-huh.
Thanks. That was great. Any other announcements or reminders? Okay, Manu, well, I will give you the floor back to tell us about TrueAge and what you've been up to.
All right. Let me go ahead and screen share here. So today's presentation is on a production deployment, a really large production deployment of W3C verifiable credentials. So using all the technology that we've been working on in this group for the past many years, 11 plus years, I guess, at this point. This stuff is actually rolling out into production, and not in a small way, in a very, very, you know, large way. So that's what the presentation is about. It's kind of about lessons learned, things of that nature. This is the first time this presentation is being done anywhere. So please be kind. It's trying to explain the expansiveness of the project is also fairly difficult. Okay, so this project is called True Age. It is a digital age verification program that is nationally available right now. In fact, the program went into production in January of this year. We took a long time waiting to talk about it because we wanted to make sure that everything was running correctly and, you know, there was a good adoption story there and that sort of thing. So this is about digital age verification. It's about making sure that, you know, college students are no longer able to use their fake IDs to go in and buy things they shouldn't be buying. It's to make sure that, you know, the sale of age-gated products in the United States is done in a safer, more responsible way. I'll go into the reasons why that's a difficult thing to accomplish these days. But first of all, let's talk about, like, what production deployment means. So True Age went into production in January 2023. At the end of July, California, the state of California DMV, announced that they were integrating it into their digital driver's license. So this image that you see here on the left is a verifiable credential. It's a 100%, you know, bona fide W3C verifiable credential that expresses that the person is above a certain age, and you've got a picture of the individual there so that the clerk can match it against the individual and then scan the code. So this is integrated into the state of California's digital driver's license application, which just rolled out into a pilot last month. 1.5 million people is the target pilot population. With an expansion to the 24 million Californians that have a driver's license in California. You will note that it is not using the MDL to prove age at all. This is using a different technology that's more privacy preserving, and I'll go into those qualities here in a bit. So that was in October. Sorry, that was in like August, September, that announcement was made. In October last month, Verifone, who is the largest point of sale manufacturer in the United States, they cover close to 60% of all convenience retail stores in the United States. So there are 150,000 of these stores. Verifone provides point of sale software for close to 75,000 of them. And so basically Verifone announced the integration of TrueAge, this new privacy protecting, you know, age verification program. So you've got the largest point of sale, vendor in the United States integrating, TrueAge, the verifiable credential, you know, privacy preserving approach of approving age at the point of sale. Their reach is around 124 million Americans. Those are the people that are under the age of 40 that you're supposed to card when they walk into the store and try to buy a bottle of wine or things of that nature. And then the target population for most Californians is, you know, 24 million that have a driver's license. Okay, so this is big news, big adoption. It's public. This booth, this is our booth at the National Association of Convenience Stores show that had 24,000 attendees. And then the California DMV license here is on the left. Okay, so that's the high-level business use case. You know, it's seeing adoption. There's significant money and effort going into it. But let's go back to kind of understand why, how digital age verification actually works, because it doesn't work like a lot of people talk about it when they talk about digital credentials and mobile driver's license and things like that. This is, you know, when people hear age verification, they're like, oh, I just show my license. Like, that is not, that is part of it, but that is certainly not the, the whole story. So, fundamentally, you know, TrueAge, and these are, you know, TrueAge slides, they're committed to, safely and simply keeping age restricted products out of the hands of minors. As some of you may realize, you know, there have been printing technologies that have been outsourced from the United States, specifically around driver's license printing. And so it is fairly easy to get a fake driver's license today that is printed on the same printers using the same ink and materials and the same software that DMVs end up using. So it's very easy to create fakes these days, and you can't really tell by looking at the plastic card that it's a fake. Even more challenging, the way things work in the United States is that, retailers can't ask a driver, can't ask a DMV whether or not a driver's license is real or not. There are costs associated with the states that allow that to happen. Some states only allow that to happen with, you know, law enforcement. And what that ends up, the situation we end up in is, the clerk that's, you know, basically policing whether or not the age-gated product should go to a potential, you know, someone that's underage, has no way of knowing whether that plastic card that they're holding that looks very real, is in fact a legitimate, driver's license. So, this needed to be, you know, it needed to be addressed. And they said, well, you know, we could go digital with it. We could depend on digital signatures, which you can't, counterfeit, and that might be the way to kind of combat some of this, uptick in card fraud that we're seeing. The other thing to know about, the organization that put this together, the National Association of Convenience Stores, is that they're a nonprofit. And Conexus, their standard setting body, is also a nonprofit standard setting body. Like the World Wide Web Consortium, they, you know, create standards for the retail industry. And they depend largely on open standards, W3C, ITF, things like that. And when the verifiable credentials 1.0 work was happening, they looked at it and went, we believe that is the solution, that we need to use an open standard, verifiable credentials. This industry is massively decentralized. So, these 150,000 stores, you might have like, you know, 12,000 to 17,000 of them are like 7-Eleven. But the long tail is like mom and pop owned stores. They, you know, a family owns 2 to 3 stores. And that is the vast majority of the way these, stores operate. So anyway, it's massively decentralized. And we needed a solution that would help all of them without harming the decentralization aspects. The other thing to know is that most of the age-gated products in the United States are sold through convenience stores. So that is where most people go to buy age-gated product. They do 54 million transactions a day, every single day, 365 days a year. Some days it's a little more, some days it's a little less, but it's a massive number of age-gated transactions that they do. And that includes everything, you know, there, it includes everything that you can think of, from, alcohol to cigarettes to vape to cannabis to energy drinks are regulated in some, states. You have to be over a certain age to buy them, things of that nature. These dots kind of represent how many of these stores exist. 152,000 stores nationwide. That fluctuates by a couple thousand every year. They do 165 million transactions a day, the stores together, 200 million plus customers per year. So 2/3 of the U.S. population finds themselves in a convenience retail store at some point during the year, many of them multiple times a week. And as I said, you know, over 50 million age checks per day. The reason this is such a big deal to a convenience store is the margins are razor thin at a convenience store. If you sell $10 million worth of products through your store, your profit on that might be $20,000. So most of the stuff is just razor thin. Gas is sold at a loss to try and get people into the store to buy coffee and sandwiches and things of that nature, and educated products. And so if they sell to the wrong person, if they accidentally sell to a minor, if they knowingly sell to a minor, it's jail time. They lose their liquor license. These stores are a part of police stings fairly regularly. First offense is a $2,500 fine, so that's 10% of their profit for that month would just go in a single violation. Each single violation is you know multiple fines. And the big problem right now is that these clerks who are not trained in counterfeit detection on cards, and even if they were, it's really hard to tell counterfeit card these days, are not able to keep up to figure out what's a fake and what's not. The other danger, of course, is in a convenience store, if you deny someone a sale, there is a non-zero likelihood that you're going to have a gun pointed at you. Shootings at convenience stores are fairly, unfortunately, common. At least violence at convenience stores can be common from consumers that feel like they should have been sold a product and they're being denied. So there's a lot of safety, clerk safety, that we're concerned about here as well. When you put a clerk in that position who is, they're making minimum wage, when you put them in the position of policing, an age gated product, there is always the risk, them saying no, puts them in danger. So fundamentally what we needed was a system that did not put the clerk in that kind of danger. We needed a system to say no. We needed to make sure that the clerk wasn't the one saying no. We needed a non-fraudulent identity documents. And the other really nice thing here is that the National Association of Convenience Stores was saying, if we're tracking individuals, themselves, nobody's going to buy into the thing. This needs to be privacy preserving, from the get-go. We need to take GDPR and CCPA and VCDPA and all the privacy regulations that are coming into the fore seriously and build a system that is truly privacy preserving, where we cannot know which individual is buying what product as they go from store to store. The other thing they really wanted to avoid is they were like, look, the retailers want to know that information, and that is not the purpose of the program. Retailers would love to have, be able to track individual store to store, but clearly that's goes against privacy regulation and is not the right thing to do for a digital age program. The other danger here was many of these stores were buying point of sale software that was just storing IDs. They would scan the driver's license and store 35 pieces of PII on the point of sale system. And that is just not a good thing to do. It creates a honeypot, that attackers can attack. And so we wanted to eliminate the storage of, all that PII, across the nation. So those are the things that are that were driving this, program. The other thing is that retailers really didn't want to be, responsible for building this system and then buying something and then finding out that it didn't actually achieve what they needed to in the state that they were operating in. They wanted to make sure that the documents that they were receiving to do age verification were authentic documents, meaning digitally signed, non-fraudulent. And they wanted it to be fairly, friction fee free. Based on a evaluation that this National Association of Convenience Stores did, 90% of people in the U.S., in the sample set supported a nationwide standard for age verification. So customers basically said, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go into one store and be vetted in one way and go into another store and be vetted in another way. This was happening. So for example, like, you know, people use their passports sometimes to prove age when they're visiting from out of town, like in Hawaii. There's a lot of passport, usage to prove age. Whereas, in certain states, you know, the types of IDs that you need to take, like tribal IDs, versus driver's licenses, you know, tend to create friction at the point of sale. So there's a lot of complexity here in, you know, which age document proves your age. So people basically said it would be nice to have, you know, one way of doing this across, the U.S. Fundamentally, you know, when you look at this program from the outside, it's a fairly simple program. You want to keep adult products out of the hands of underage kids. You want to shut down social selling. So social selling is when someone above age goes into a convenience store and buys a lot of age-gated product and then walks to the nearest high school and resells that to high schoolers, right? So that's social selling that we wanted to cut down on. Social selling also means that the individual would just chain from store to store. They would go to one store, buy their top limit, and just walk into another store, different brand, different retailer, buy their limit, then walk into yet another store and do that. These systems were completely disconnected. And that meant that, people could go way above, you know, their purchase limits and then go and do social selling with that. We wanted to standardize the carding process and of course protect people's privacy as they went in. There's no reason why you should be handing over 35 pieces of personally identifiable information when all you need to prove is your age. At the end of the day, the thing you show is this thing on the right here. So this is my kind of true age app. This is a verifiable credential for an age token that basically says I'm over the age of 21. And it has a single use token in it. And that's it. It doesn't have my name. It doesn't have an image. It doesn't have my home address or any of that stuff in there. Okay, so let me pause for half a second. I've kind of covered high level stuff. Any questions so far? I can keep going to the tech stuff, but go ahead, David, please.
Yes, so you said you want to cut down on social selling, but you also said there's no tracking and tracing. So those two seem to be incompatible to me.
Yeah, I'll get into the details there on how we do it. Fundamentally, we take the identity information and create a pseudonymous persona. So there is we can tell counts associated with a certain token, but we can't get to any of the PII. I'll go into that here in a bit.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Steve?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, great. Hey, I don't mean to get pedantic here. I just wanted to verify a couple statements that you made. You said that kind of a canonical or a typical convenience store might do $10 million worth of sales with a 20K profit, so about, you know, 2% margin. Mm-hmm. And then you followed up to say that a $2,500 fine represents 10% of the profit for that month.
Yes, it was a bit of a hand wave.
I understand that, but I mean, this is like, you know, a factor of 100, right? I just want to kind of get a sense of, you know, what these convenience stores serve, you know, serve an average one sort of typically does in terms of business.
An average one in the middle of the Midwest in a 400 person town or one that's in downtown New York City, right? The 10 million one is probably something that is in a service area of like 100,000 people ish.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, it varies wildly.
Okay. Thanks.
And the fines vary wildly and then who's stung where varies wildly. Like, as you can imagine, like the further you get out into rural communities, the less stings there are, the less, you know, things of that nature. The more you get into cities, the more stings there are. there's a lot of diversity, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess maybe a better question would be, so is sort of a 2%, 2 to 5% margin kind of not uncommon, or is
it's not uncommon? That's a pretty common thing. I mean, you've got, you know, these convenience stores also sell gas. So if you go to a gas station at all, that's a convenience store, it is a convenience store, right? And what they typically do is they sell gas at a loss to get you into the store. So you'll buy a Gatorade or a coffee or, you know, something like that, something that has a higher margin item. So the whole business model for convenience stores is built around getting you into the store so that they can sell you, something that's in the store.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead, Adrian.
Okay. In the early slides, you showed a California driver's license and a wallet. So I'm just curious, and I'm sure you're going to maybe get to this. This presentation that you just showed us with your picture on it, is that something that would be available in the DMV app, or how is that being handled? Not just immediately, but sort of in the planning stages in the future.
This thing on the left, Adrian, is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about this thing on the right? The thing on the left is available in the DMV app today. So if you're in California, if you're a California citizen and you've got a driver's license there, you can get this today.
And what I'm asking is, all of this back-end stuff, which I'm sure you're going to get into, you know, to avoid social selling and whatnot, is this integrated into the system when you're using the California driver's license app to prove age?
I think I'm trying to read between the lines, Adrian. So does the California DMV app do anything special other than showing a QR code? And the answer to that is no. So the California DMV app, all they do is they show these single-use tokens and they show the picture, and that's effectively all that's done there, right? The mechanism to ensure that people aren't going over their limits for anything that does have limits on it, products that have limits on it, that's all done in the back end of the TrueAge system.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'll get to this. The reason I'm asking is there's already over a decade of experience with prescription drug monitoring programs that have similar requirements. So please go on. I think you're going to get to that.
That's exactly right, Adrian. And I would imagine that this system is closely related to that, but takes a more aggressive privacy stance than prescription drug systems tend to take. So part of, you know, the work that we did, you know, in the program is look at the way prescription drug programs, you know, operate, particularly because the cannabis regulations in the U.S. looked like they were going to, you know, follow the same kind of path. But yeah, I'll get into that a bit more, Adrian. There are very strong parallels between the two systems. And then just please, you know, ask the remaining questions when I get to it if I don't answer your question. Okay, I'm going to keep going. Here's some just core tenants. The slide deck's up there so you can read through the details here. I wanted to put a focus on privacy today. And this other thing, free, this system is free for retailers. It's free for consumers. There was no way that the system was going to get adoption if it wasn't free to the retailers and the consumers. As I said, TrueAge is a nonprofit. NACS is a nonprofit. Their goal is to solve industry problems for the entire industry. It's the retailer's job. The retailers are the ones that are for profit. Okay. Systemic volume limitations. We'll talk about that here in a bit. Okay. So how does this work? Fundamentally, we started the design off with a massive reduction in PII. We did not want to collect all 35 pieces of information on a driver's license. So the way this was done before is, they ask you for your driver's license, they flip it over, and there's a PDF 417 barcode on the back, and they scan that and they put it into the point of sale system. That captures all of the data in that PDF barcode, which is all of your PII on your driver's license. So you hand all of that over when it was checked. So the first thing we wanted to do is reduce the amount of PII that even touches the TruAge system, to follow what we saw happening with GDPR and CCPA, which is, you need to, as a retailer, reduce the PII that you're collecting to the bare minimum for the transaction that you're performing. And collecting 35 pieces of information was over collection of information. So we narrowed it down to 4 pieces of personal information: the issuing authority, so which state issued this driver's license, the document identifier number, which is the driver's license number, your date of birth, and when the document expires. Those are the only 4 pieces of information that ever go into the TruAge system. And when they go into the TruAge system, they're immediately encrypted, multi-way encrypted, meaning that TruAge by itself cannot extract that PII again, right? So what we do is we require multiple parties to unlock the PII data. There has to be a subpoena in play. There has to be potentially law enforcement or the courts in play. Legal counsel has to be in play, and the technical team that operates the system in production has to be in play. So you need multiple parties that are struggling for the word, find mutually distrustful of each other to unlock it, right? So you don't want, you know, everyone agreeing to unlock whenever they need to unlock something. You need to make sure that, you know, the legal and operations and all those folks are involved. So basically, we take these 4 pieces of information, we create a pseudonymous identifier for the person that only lives in the TruAge system, and we lock away the PII until it's actually required based on some kind of legal process. So once we, you know, create that pseudonym inside the TruAge system, we issue single-use tokens. And those single-use tokens are the things that are used outside the system. These single-use tokens are completely random. Only the TruAge system can map them back to a persona. And even when we map it back to a persona, we don't know who that individual is. All we know is what limits they may or may not have hit. So the reason we did this is to prevent retailers from using these tokens to track people. Even the same retailer, 2 stores from the same brand, using a single-use token at one retailer and then the next store does not allow them to track you because the token's single-use. Okay, and this kind of just goes over how that tokenization process happens. The other important thing about this program is we have to make sure that these are real people that are onboarding into the system. They do have, we still, and this is going to happen for a long time as far as verifiable credentials are concerned, there are going to be plastic cards that exist. Some of those cards are going to be fraudulent. We know that. We do our best to check the driver's licenses. So there are services that allow you to check. There are watermarks that exist in some driver's licenses that we can check before we onboard people. This goes above and beyond what a clerk's able to do at the cash register. And then fundamentally, that individual, in order to activate these tokens, activate the verifiable credential tokens, they have to walk into the store and present a driver's license, present the QR code in a way that we can kind of bind the a human being to those sets of tokens. The system is designed to work in fully offline mode, so the store does not need to be online in order to check the verifiable credential and the digital signature on it that says the person is above a certain age. Yeah, I think that's more or less that. Go ahead, Adrian.
this sounds very interesting because it seems like you've created a contextual reputation system where deduplication is done on the basis of a deduplicated credential, the driver's license, but the reputation is managed contextually for under whatever, you know, principles apply to enforcement or whatever you want to call it here. How general is this model that you're using, or am I leaping way too far? Is it truly, is this idea of requiring a subpoena to break the notary's log, is the way I always thought about it, mm-hmm. A general solution for reputation and context?
That's an excellent question, Adrian. I don't know is the answer. I think we'd like to think that it's generalizable. We have been razor sharp focused on just age. The biggest thing we did not want the system to turn into is, you know, a tracking mechanism for consumer preferences, right? And so, we have tried to just narrow the system to do age-gated purchases, enforcing quantity restrictions, and that's it. You could argue that that is generalizable to something like, pharmaceutical industry. It's generalizable to other systems that, narrowly focus on a particular quality of an individual. But we haven't deployed the generalized solution in other environments. There would be differences. One thing that we did learn along the way is that there's always this pressure to like add more information, add more, kind of correlatable fields to the persona. And, we found that it's really important to have a set of legal staff that understand why that is such a horrible idea, right? I mean, cause you have to think about kind of the dynamics at play here. Retailers want more and more and more data on the individual. But that, works against the program because the more, data you associate with that persona, the less people are going to trust it. People don't want retailers hoovering up a bunch of data, when all they're doing is, an age-gated, purchase. So, all that to say, these systems, if there is something generalizable among all of them, is to make sure that, you're using the word reputation. I feel a bit uneasy about that word. It's just some aspect of the individual doesn't creep into collecting more and more data on the individual. You have to stay razor sharp focused on a very specific aspect. And then just focus the system, on that aspect. Going beyond that, means that you're dangerously wandering into data broker territory, which this system it's not designed to do. And luckily, as I said, the legal staff have basically said at every turn, if you go that direction, you're going to violate GDPR. You're going to violate CCPA. It's not an end goal. So sorry, that was a long-winded way of saying I would assume the system's generalizable, but until we actually apply it in a bunch of other scenarios, we can't say for sure. Did that address some of your question, Adrian?
Yes. My question was specifically about the need for deduplication. The reason I use the term reputation is to focus on civil resistance. But I hear you, and this is not necessarily on topic for today. But it seems to me like you've gone part way towards, something that could work for, say, voting. To take the most controversial possible thing. And let's go on. But okay. That's the sense in which I meant it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And again, this system cannot work for voting. I'm just kind of going to say that the big advantage that we have in the convenience retail sector is that there are 4 million, retail clerks out there that are out there right now. who are in the real world in person that are capable of checking an ID, and they've been trained to do that at in a rough, you know, basis. So our Sybil resistance protection in the system is only because the convenience store industry has 4 million people that provide that kind of check in person identity verification for free. Very few other industries have that. So that's, I think, what creates the Sybil resistance, here to a degree. This is just kind of how the app works. So on the left is, you know, how you onboard into the system. You download the app, which is free. You take a snapshot of your driver's license, barcode, and selfie. The TrueAge system is designed so it only receives the four pieces of information I mentioned. The client, you know, removes all the other information. That's used to create a pseudonymous account that's associated with your driver's license, and then your account is created. But the tokens that you're given are deactivated until you walk into a store and activate them. And you activate them by showing them the QR code, showing them your plastic driver's license, and doing the binding there. To do an age-restricted purchase, then your tokens are activated. You show the clerk the QR code to scan. They're trained to look at the image and look at you as well to make sure that that matches. The system, the TrueAge system, then takes that pseudonymous persona and verifies the your age and quantity limits to make sure you're not over any quantities. And then they send a token back to the convenience store point of sale system to put in the transaction log. So nothing, no PII is ever stored in the transaction log. And then you pay and you go. So it's meant to be a pretty quick process that mirrors you showing your driver's license, but is way more privacy protecting and safer for the retailer and the customer. Harrison, I see you on the queue.
Yes. What do you mean by deactivated and activated? Can you go a little bit deeper into that?
Yeah. Let me see if I. Let's see. Well, no. I guess I didn't put that slide in here. Deactivated just means like we can't trust people to onboard purely in an online situation and then use those tokens because nobody's actually bound that individual, the human being. To that persona in the system. Meaning there's no such thing as a purely online onboarding except for, you know, we'll talk about the California DMV case here in a bit, but, we wanted to make sure, let me go back. Adrian's question was, how do you do Sybil resistance? And my answer was, we've got 4 million clerks that are always there in the United States that can check an ID and do things with a point of sale system. And so the way that, you know, we onboard system through the app, onboard people through the app, but we don't activate their tokens for the first time until they go into the store and do that physical binding. That's how we keep, you know, people just guessing driver's licenses online or using fake IDs online to activate their account. We have to have that individual go into a store, use their app, show their physical ID, so that there's a mapping there, and we need a physical person, a clerk there, checking all of those things. So deactivated is only when you onboard for the first time. Once you go in the store and scan, you know, your ID and everything the first time, then they're activated and you no longer need your physical driver's license. Did that answer your question, Harrison?
Oh, I see. So the onboarding is actually not fully online. It's only when they first time go into a physical store, then that completes the onboarding. That's what you meant.
Yes, that's correct. Yep. Yeah, you've got to onboard into the system and you have to do that with a physical interaction in the real world.
And the reason why you need to do that is because you need that binding between the physical and digital identity.
Yes, you got it. Exactly.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. Who's on the – I don't know who's – David and then Adrian, I guess, are on the queue.
Yeah, just pursuing that a little bit further. I'm still not 100% clear on this physical binding because what you've recorded in the TrueAge is a hash of the selfie, okay?
No, not of the selfie. No, of the driver's license number, date of birth, expiration date. The selfie, okay. We never see the selfie. We don't want to see the selfie because that's the tracking token that would be uploaded to us.
Oh, sorry. Now I said the TrueAge system receives a hash of the selfie.
No, it does. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you're correct. Sorry.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it receives a hash of the selfie. It does not receive the selfie itself.
Right. So this is the bit. So I don't dig how when the user is showing some physical picture of themselves, how the system knows that that is the genuine picture that relates to the selfie.
Because they see it on the phone. They see the selfie on the phone, and there is in the driver's license, the physical driver's license has to tokenize on the TrueAge system to the same token that they're showing on their app. So there's a multi-document binding between their physical driver's license and the four pieces of information on it, the token, the single-use token that they're showing to onboard into the system, the picture on their driver's license, and the picture on the app. All those things have to line up. We do not check the image data, right? That's what the clerk does. They do that in a decentralized, distributed way where that information is not uploaded to us.
Got right. Now I've got it. Okay. It's the selfie that's shown to the storeman,
yes,
and the driving license, and the storeman compares the two and says, okay, it looks like this is genuine.
Yep, that's right. Okay. Yeah. And there are ways of us getting better than that. That's just what we have today because, you know, people have plastic driver's licenses that we have to deal with.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Of course. Adrian.
If in the beginning you said that fake driver's licenses are readily available, so if somebody has a fake, if somebody wants to avoid the social limits or the reputation issue, they can just get themselves 10 different fake driver's licenses and they're good to go?
They could today. In the future, you know, this system is system's not 100% perfect. Right. There's no such thing unless we ratchet up the security so much that it's a pain to use the system and no one uses it. So we do expect some people like that to slip through the cracks. But then it's kind of like those people exist today and why would they use the app, you know, anyway? Meaning that, you know, there's no reason to use the extra stuff. They would just get a bunch of fake IDs. This really comes into play when we're talking about California DMV. So California DMV integrated it. If the states start, you know, going more to digital driver's licenses, we can get rid of that, you know, plastic, you know, fraud vector, in the system. So just to, you know, be clear, Adrian, the number of people that are doing that to get around the system are vanishingly small compared to the number of college students that have a fake ID that try to use it, you know.
Oh, I completely understand. Again, the reason I asked the question for clarification is because when we see all of the problems with something like Aadhaar as a way of creating a deduplicated ID, and you're obviously avoiding that by not doing any biometric matching of your hashes or like the WorldCoin approach, et cetera. I was just trying to be clear as to how far this particular scheme, which I really like, this notarization aspect of what you're doing, would be generalizable. But yeah, I got it.
Yeah, and you got it. Those are the reasons we did not do the biometric stuff, is we did not want to fall into an Aadhaar-like system. We didn't want to fall into a WorldCoin-like system where, you know, people were perfectly identifiable, you know, in the system. It's just, it violates all kinds of privacy expectations, well, when you do that. Okay, just noting the time, you know, we're almost out. Just to go through this, this is the age restricted purchase thing. So cannabis was one of the things that we had to solve for. There are limits like you can only buy, you know, 8,000 milligrams per day of something like a cannabis vape pod, depending on the state that you're in and the regulations in play. So the system's built to enable those kinds of systemic limitations. And basically, you know, because that your age is mapped to kind of a persona that we don't know any of your, you know, details unless it's subpoenaed, we can do a systemic check when you do a purchase and see if you're over your limit or under your limit. And that's the only, you know, checking that we do there. As far as technologies that were used, this is the list. There's a lot of CCG technologies that we use. There are a lot of W3C and ITF technologies that we use. So JSON-LD, verifiable credentials, data integrity, DIDs. The Connexus Age Verification Standard defines the standard that the point-of-sale systems speak and the verifiable credential itself. We use OAuth 2 just for the retailers to connect to the system so that we authorize, you know, which stores are checking with the system. That QR code is a CBOR LD encoded verifiable credential. So it's a binary format, super compressed. We use the VC API for issuing verification exchanges. We use EDVs. So the TrueAge app, which is a digital wallet, uses an encrypted data vault to store these single-use tokens. We use authorization capabilities, HTTP signatures, Chappie. Credential refresh is used to refresh the credentials. So when you get a batch of credentials, you store them until you run out of those credentials, which means that you don't have to you don't phone home for every single, transaction. You can get a bundle of, I think it's like 10 of them now. And then every time you use one, they're effectively, spent. And then when you run out, you use credential refresh to go back and get a new batch. And then we use DidKey, for the signatures, on the credential itself. And unfortunately, we're out of time. Back over to you, Harrison.
Thanks, Miami. This was really, really fascinating and great. And you're right. I'm bummed that we're out of time because I think that we could discuss this for a lot longer. So we will look for an opportunity to do that. Thank you, everybody. This was a really interesting topic. It's so exciting to, again, see this flywheel, I think, really starting to catch momentum. So, thanks everybody. We'll see you next Tuesday.